Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Keane, online fitness coach, nutritionist, and 3 times best-selling author here to help you by deconstructing expert guests on all things health, fitness, and mindset. Today's guest is with Dr. Kevin Stone on how to recover from injury and thrive, becoming an athlete who can play forever, and mental fitness for physical recovery. We go in a slightly different direction for today's episode, away from nutrition and away from training. Not completely, but to some degree, and we focus on injury prevention and injury rehabilitation alongside some of the changes to sports medicine in recent years with anabolic therapies and stem cell therapies. So touching on some topics that we haven't previously covered on this podcast, and I think if you are somebody who is similar to me, where injury prevention is a big thing for you, so you can stay injury free, so you can train at a high level, or you're in the midst or in the middle of injury rehabilitation, this podcast is going to give you a lot of value on what you can potentially do to either stay injury free or get your mindset right to rehab correctly out of your injury, and also maybe open up some doors to the sports medicine world that and the shift that has changed and taken that sports medicine has taken over the most recent years with anabolic therapies and stem cell therapies. So as I said, stuff we haven't previously covered on the podcast. So without further ado, here is today's expert guest, somebody who works with Olympians and NBA professional basketball players, amongst others, Dr. Kevin Stone, on how to recover from injury and thrive, becoming an athlete who can play forever, and mental fitness for physical recovery. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Dr. Kevin Stone, MD. Dr. Stone was trained at Harvard University in internal medicine and orthopedic surgery and at Stanford University in general surgery, and is a pioneer of advanced orthopedic surgical and rehabilitation techniques to repair, regenerate, and replace damaged cartilage and ligaments. He's an orthopedic surgeon at the Stone Clinic and has operated on high-performance NBA players like Steph Curry and members of the US Olympic ski team, helping them bounce back stronger than before with recovery methods he's developed over the last 30 years. Dr. Stone uses anabolic therapy and other biological techniques to work to preserve the natural biology of a joint, helping people avoid or delay an artificial joint replacement. He's also the best-selling author of the book Play Forever. I'm looking forward to talking all things injury prevention, injury rehabilitation, and getting our bodies ready to quote-unquote play forever in today's episode. Dr. Stone, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Thank you so much.
I'm really looking forward to chatting, and I want to dive straight in because your book goes through how to play forever, the name of the title of it. But I want to talk about what kind of injuries stop athletes from playing forever. What advice can you offer for people who want to prevent those injuries? And we'll use that as a jumping off point.
Sure. So the number one cause that I see from athletes of almost all ages is a mental error. The number one cause of an injury is a mental error. And so what does that mean? It means your head wasn't in the game. You were thinking about your girlfriend or boyfriend. You were distracted for a minute. If you ask almost any athlete, there's just this one moment, I knew I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have reached out. I was just going a little too fast. Something. And it's almost always, if you can just get rid of the distractions and really focus and really think about what you're doing, you'll diminish so many of their injuries that occur. And it's injuries that stop you from playing forever. You can run forever on your joints. You'll never develop arthritis unless you're injured or you have a genetic predisposition. But it's the injury that knocks you off the horse and off the game.
So with that, you advise your readers in your book to focus on their joints. What level of attention do joints require to guard them from injury? And you mentioned there, which is very interesting that I want to unpack, that we could potentially run forever. It's injuries that stop us. So is it very much a case of just staying injury free and looking after our joints, looking after our ligaments, looking after our body in general? Or is there something else we have to look at as well?
It really is. So we can focus on several different things that help you think about how you play forever. First of all, your weight. So you take 2 to 3 million steps per year at up to 5 times your body weight. And so a single leg coming off a jump can be 5 times your normal body weight. So if you lose 10 pounds to optimize your weight, that's up to 50 pounds 2 to 3 million times per year on that joint. So you can see how just a little bit of body weight optimization really goes a long way towards preserving your joints. One simple thing to think about. Another way to look at it is if you ask someone, which one puts more force on your joint, walking a mile or running a mile? And most people, of course, will say running, but the real answer is they're equal, depending on how you run. Peak forces are higher in running because you're landing, but the total force is the same because you take fewer steps, right? So if you look at your running technique, we've learned an awful lot about running in shoes and impact. Short strides, midfoot landing, smooth or soft surfaces makes a huge difference in the amount of impact on your joint. So those are just two little things that say, hey, if you optimize your weight, if you think through your mechanics, and whether that's for running mechanics or weightlifting mechanics or almost any sport you do, it makes so much sense to get a coach, to get a trainer, to get someone to teach you good form, because form really matters.
And it compounds, as you said, over time. A lot of people listening to this podcast will either be athletes or runners or gym goers. And if you're consistently doing, I see in the gyms, and I'm sure you're the same, Dr. Stone, people lifting weights and throwing weights like crazy when they're doing movements that are throwing basically form out the window. And you're basically asking for injury at some point when you're consistently doing that. And I think running is just an equivalent version of that for people listening. One of my favorite things about your book that I think is going to connect really heavily with listeners is the mental fitness and the mindset approach to injury, either in the prevention style, but very much so in the rehabilitation element. What is mental fitness? And talk to us how it impacts and relates to physical fitness.
So if you think about mental fitness, so think about all the time you spend in the gym or all the time you spend out running or rowing or doing whatever sport it is you love to do. Then ask yourself, how much time do you spend training your mind? How much time do you spend really thinking about how do I get rid of distractions? How do I mentally focus? How do I be calm in that specific setting? Or how do I ramp up my attention skills so that I can target something a little bit better? And the answer almost always is almost none. Very few people think about how to train for their mental game. But if you would just pause a little bit before you go out for your run, if you just did that little mental focus of settling down, letting your mind calm, getting rid of your stresses or things that are bugging you that you're going out for a run for anyhow to get rid of, and think about, okay, I'm going for my run. How can I optimize my form, my technique, my mileage, everything? One of the really good points that I just always remind people is that never work out if you're working out in front of a TV or while reading a book. You've got to be able to listen to your heart rate. You've got to be able to listen to your muscles. You've got to know when you're bumping up against your peak, when you're bumping up against your aerobic fitness, and then be able to push a little bit harder. And if you're distracted by a book or a TV, you just really can't feel that sweat. You can't feel that heart rate. You can't feel those changes that are so critical to you getting the most out of your workout session. Music is okay, because music somehow works in the brain in a really different way that's not so distracting. You tend not to think about the music, you use the music. But reading and TV are really take away from your workout performance.
Yeah, that's something that I think time and time again happens to people. It's that lack of concentration, particularly in a controlled environment like the gym or on a run, where for the most part, you can see what you're doing. I think sport is obviously different. There's a lot more contact based on if it's a contact sport and more variables that you can control. But for people listening to this podcast who are runners or going to the gym, there's technically no reason that you should get injured if you're focused on form, focused on what you're doing, not reading a book, maybe listening to a podcast. You might get away with that depending on how expert or how advanced you are as training, but definitely not watching TV and taking your eye off what you're doing. I'm curious with that, and one of the questions I wanted to ask you, which I think ties in nicely there, there's a lot of misconceptions out there when it comes to injuries. And I think either in the rehabilitation or in the prevention, and I think your book unpacks that very well for people. But what's one or two of the most common misconceptions you see when it comes to injury, Dr. Stone? Is it in the prevention element, or is it in the rehabilitation element, or is it something else completely?
It's probably mostly in the treatment element, because what we've learned, we're now in what I call the anabolic era of sports medicine. And let me explain what that means. So in the old days, you would get an injury to your knee or your shoulder. A surgeon would go in, they'd take out the torn tissue. They might jam in cortisone that shuts down healing and tell you, go away and play and come back to me when you're ready for your joint replacement. And where we're in today is what I call that anabolic era. Instead of taking tissues out, we have the ability to put the meniscus cartilage back in. We've got tons of donor meniscus now, or put ligaments back in from donor tissue. And we can augment that healing by adding growth factors and stimulants that recruit your body's own stem cells and progenitor cells to help them heal. Sorry about that. And so, so this wonderful anabolic era of sports medicine, where we can stimulate healing, we can replace tissues. So my counsel to athletes is, the moment you get hurt, figure out what's wrong, make an accurate diagnosis, repair, regenerate, or replace the tissue. Don't just wait and say, oh, you know, it's okay, I'll play on this injured joint. And try to avoid the old style of surgery where people are removing tissues and telling you to come back later for your joint replacement. We think that's just out of date. And we think, so for athletes, the biggest thing to think about is treat injuries as that most important thing that's happened to you in your athletic career, and treat them well right away, get them to heal properly, and then you can play forever. But if you live on that and play on those damaged tissues, you will destroy the joint over time.
That's the treatment side, and we'll unpack that a little bit further as we go along, because I definitely want to pick your brain. I know you talk a lot about anabolic therapy, stem cell, etc. So I'm going to come back to that at some point. But I want to jump into the prevention, because there's a lot of people listening to this podcast, some who are injured currently, but I would say 80 to 90% of those listening are in the non-injured point right now as they listen to this podcast. When it comes to prevention techniques, I've got kind of my own protocol. I'm a big fan of cryotherapy and ice baths post-training, particularly like harder runs. I'll do some form of rolling or trigger point, things along the lines based on how my body's feeling. But do you have any preferred techniques for injury prevention with people, or is it 95% checking the form, like you said, or are there other things you like to recommend to people or get people to consider?
Sure. So especially if you're in cold weather environments, playing warm is a lot better than playing cold. And so cold tissues are stiff, they're not distensible, meaning they don't stretch well. So getting in that hot shower, that hot bath, that hot tub, before you work out, before you stretch, before you play, makes a big difference. And so we like to warm up before and ice down after. So you'd be surprised how few people take the time to use the tools around them, a simple shower or a bathtub or hot tub if they have one. Really get in those things and then do your workout. You'll be surprised how much looser you are. And so I think the prevention side of it is just, number one, getting your head in the game, as we talked about before, then looking at your body and say, okay, what am I going to do now? Is it my workout or my play? And what is vulnerable? So if my tissues are tight, if my joints are tight, I've got to do things to work on mobility. I think we've all learned over the last decade that mobility is more important than strength. And that if you don't have mobility, all of the workouts that you'll do, all the play that you'll do, will be using a limited part of your body, a limited part of that joint, and the rest of that range of motion is vulnerable to injury. So for prevention, it's about mobility. And I think there's so many good ways now, whether it's Pilates, whether it's stretching, whether it's yoga, whether it's rolling, whether it's whatever, just try to figure out how to get mobility into your program. The second thing is to try to figure out how to get diversity into your program. So if you're a cyclist, you probably have weak abs and you're not doing the things that build bone. And it's true for every sport. You know, you think about what you're working on and what you're ignoring. So adding diversity, becoming that three sport athlete again, makes a huge difference to diminishing, not increasing, your injuries. And so try to think through, and just sort of the way you were in high school when you used to play a different sport each season, try to add a new sport or a new activity into your regimen, at least one every 6 months. So if you look back at the last 6 months and say, okay, what have I been doing for play and for workouts? What have I not been doing? What could I add in here that would make me a more diverse athlete? Therefore, you're using different muscles, different range of motion, different mindset. And that really does help, number one, keep you playing forever, and number two, diminish injuries.
I think there's a lot of value there to unpack. I think something that people have heard me say on this podcast is, you know, make sure you're doing movement specific warm-ups, like something that happens. I'm not sure if this is the same in the States. I lived there for a little bit, so I've seen it probably there as well, but not in the last 10 years. But in Ireland and the UK, people will go in and go, right, I've got my weights workout, and then they'll warm up by running on the treadmill before they train their shoulders or before they train their back or before they train their chest. And I get where they're coming from. It's warming up the body, it's core temperature, all of that. But realistically, I would imagine, and you can speak to me and tell me, Dr. Stone, if I'm wrong, because this is your area versus mine. I'm in the personal training, sports nutrition, the nutrition element side with people, that if you're doing a shoulder workout or if you're doing a chest workout, you want to warm up that's specific to that muscle group as opposed to just running on a treadmill. Is that the advice you would offer to people, or is just the case of getting warm enough for people before they train in the gym, for example?
So you've said it perfectly. Another way to think about it is to say, listen, if I want to get some part of my body stronger, if I'm going to work on something or play with something that's going to help make it stronger, what do I need to do to increase its mobility before I make it stronger? So that's a really simple way to think through just exactly what you were saying.
And with the three-sport approach, the three-sport athlete, again, my favorite section of the book was where you're breaking down CrossFit and cycling. And I laughed there when you talked about abs, weak abs for cyclists, because it's so true. And something that a lot of people who have been long-term listeners, because we'll have people from all different sports on here, that stops people getting bored. But as you said, it builds up that ability to potentially play forever when you're hitting different sports. Do you have any that you particularly like? And again, I'm completely biased because I like weightlifting, I like CrossFit, I like sports-specific sprints and cycling and running. But if you had to pick three sports for someone who wanted to play forever, do you have any three in mind that you think works in terms of complementary exercises for one another or complementary movements for one another?
Well, unfortunately, it's the most boring for some people, but almost all of our athletes can be on a bike and in a pool. Those two things are almost universal. Even with our injured knees, we can almost always get them on a bike right away. And so falling in love with your bike and falling in love with your pool, whether or not that's your main sport or that's just your alternative, is really a good thing to do, because I've got an awful lot of patients in their 70s, 80s, and even now 90s who are able to get their workouts, able to play in the pool, able to stay on the bike. So if you have those in the background, no matter what injuries might occur in other sports that you like to play, you'll always be able to revert back to them or use them as your alternative.
And I think people can get up in their heads when they get injured as well, where they go, well, I'm injured, I'm not going to work out now, I'm not going to train. And that's the most tempting excuse on the planet. Whereas, as you mentioned, you can get into a pool or you can get into a bike. You can do something. There's very few injuries, I would imagine, and I might be wrong, with the exception of maybe spinal injuries, back injuries, and maybe people can do, you would know this better than I would, you can train around a lot of things. If you injure your lower body, you can do some upper body work. If you injure your upper body, you can do lower body work. Would you agree with 95% of injuries that people get, the pool and the bike, they'll be able to do something? Obviously, there's always going to be outliers, but just for those who are listening now who are injured and have said what I call pressing the fuck it button, they go, fuck it, I'm injured, I'm not doing anything. You know, would you recommend that they try and do something in the pool and the bike or work around the injury? Or is there a case for, you know, heal up and then come back at 100%?
So yes, I totally agree with you, but let me say it another way that might be more catchy for their mindset. And not using your exact term, but so in one sense, I'm a drug pusher. And the drug that I want to push, and the one that can work for almost everybody, are testosterone and adrenaline, pheromones, all the things that you get when you exercise, that you naturally increase and produce, so that those kinds of stimulants are circulating in your body and you can increase them by simply exercising. So if you're injured, if you're depressed, if you're bummed out, if you're whatever, you have an entire pharmacy inside your body. And all you need to do is stimulate the production of those things, the wonderful pheromones, the wonderful endorphins, the wonderful testosterone, the wonderful adrenaline makes you feel great. And so tapping into your own internal pharmacy is the best way to recover from any injury. And so the degree that I'm good at stimulating my patients to tap into those drugs determines how successful I am as a surgeon and a physician.
You've given me a lovely segue into opportunity and injury, which is something that you talk about. And I think the way you see situations, it's just mental gymnastics, reframing a situation. Talk about what you mean by opportunity and injury.
So when you get an injury, and if it's big enough one for you to take a pause for a minute from what you're normally doing, it's a phenomenal opportunity to look at the rest of your body. Because when was the last time you paid attention to the small muscles in your feet? Or when was the last time you paid attention to the small muscles at the side of around your back that you might not have really focused on? Or when was the last time you paid attention purely to your cardio level? Just purely how big can you build your respiration volume? Or when was the last time you paid attention to any one of these things? And so an injury is an opportunity to say, let's do a checklist of where am I in life. It's an opportunity to add a trainer or a therapist or a coach into your life and say, hey, I realize I got injured here. I've got some downtime relative to that activity, but I've got a lot of uptime relative to everything else that I haven't paid attention to. It's a gift in a sense where you get to take catalog your strengths and weaknesses and say, hey, listen, if I can, in my job as a physician is if I can help that patient come back from their injury, as we say, fitter, faster, and stronger than they've been in years, then we feel like we've contributed to them, and they feel like their injury wasn't so bad, and now they're a better athlete. So use that injury as an opportunity, and every single one of them is. Unfortunately, some of us have more opportunities too often in life than we'd ever like to have, but it's just the reality of being a good athlete and exposure to the things that we love to do.
I love that. And I fractured a bone in my foot this time last year, in June of last year. And I trained right through it. I documented the whole thing on Instagram, but I used it as an opportunity. I was like, okay, I'll build up my upper body. I'll get a little bit bigger now. I can lift more weights. And I started drilling my swimming technique. I had a buoy board in between my legs, so I was able to drill my swimming technique. So in every injury, there's an opportunity, but you have to look for it and you have to choose to see it, because otherwise it's too easy to get bummed out and get drained and get depressed. And again, hands up, I've been there as well as someone who's been an athlete all my life. So I think what you're saying, Dr. Stone, is so important. And again, for people who are in that boat at the minute, your book Play Forever does go through that in a lot more detail in terms of the mindset element, which was the big pull for me when it came to talking on the podcast. So I'm really glad that we're getting to do that. You also make a great distinction between fantasy and visualization and how they both factor into recovery. Can you tell me a little bit more and tell us a little bit more about that?
In visualization, you're thinking through all the steps that you need to do in order to get down a race course or get through, you know, a specifically difficult event. You're trying to memorize the steps. And that works well for lots of different situations. Where it doesn't work well is when you just need to get past and excel greater than you've ever done before. You need to sort of fantasize about what that incredible event or accomplishment or task or win would look like. And if you can do that, you take yourself into another level of performance. You perform outside of your skill set. You extend your boundaries. And when you're doing visualization, you're limiting yourself to within your boundaries. So sport is about fun. And thinking through how could you possibly have the most fun you've ever had doing whatever it is you're about to go do will help, you know, keep the ball rolling and keep the fun going and keep the activity going.
A part of the book that I want to unpack, I think it was chapter 2 or 3, my memory's escaping me now, but it was natural gyms. And this is something that as I get older, I've started to kind of move more towards. Can you talk to us about natural gyms and pull out a little bit from the book on what you mean by that? It's in the Sports Specific Insights. I think it's chapter 2 or 3. I can't remember. It's early on in the book. But can you talk to us about natural gyms?
Well, I think what you're referring to is this. We so encourage people to get outdoors. The environment that we live in, all of us live in, whether it's a city or it's a suburban or it's in the mountains, everything around you is a tool, is a gym, is an opportunity, is a playground. And when you look at the joy of children in a park, in the playground, when you listen to the sounds, the screeches, the yells, the whoops, we sometimes have forgotten how much fun all those things are. And I think as soon as you go and take your environment around you and say, this is my playground, this is my park, this is my gym, this is my place, then you increase your enjoyment of everything you're doing. Two parts to that are, number one, when we went to the playground as kids, invariably, whether we were alone or not, we found another playmate. And it's one of the things we're not doing a good enough job, and my patients aren't doing a good enough job, and as they get older, we tend to go out and play on our own. We tend to go to the gym on our own. We tend to think about working out as an individualistic thing. We tend not to play enough. And so if you can add people into your playground, if you can grab partners, if you can use coaches and trainers better than most people do. Most people might use a coach once or twice and then not do it again, or they've forgotten what it was like in college to have one. Re-engage with people who are making a profession out of how to show you how to do something well, to do it better, to improve yourself, or to play with somebody else.
I think it's such great advice. And we have such a wide spectrum on the podcast of people who are gym advocates all the way down to people who look for that natural gym in whatever shape that is. And that's great advice to, you know, find a coach, find other people, even for the accountability element and the joy element. It can make people sustain a long-term lifestyle change when it comes to their overall health and fitness. You go through the book with lots of different athletes and giving examples. And I know that you've worked on Steph Curry, and in the book you talk about Tiger Woods and a couple of others in terms of lessons from them. With your experience of working with high-level athletes, what are some of the common trends that you see with them when it comes to their probably injury rehabilitation in terms of the way they approach it? Do you tend to find that there's a big difference between those high-level professional athletes and, say, the general population when it comes to their rehabilitation or the way they approach it or their mindset in general? And if so, how is something, or is there something that we could potentially take from them that we could apply ourselves if we're rehabbing at the minute?
So just to clarify, I didn't work on Steph directly. We used him as an example, though, and have worked with other athletes and other warriors as well. But what I do is I try to say to a normal patient who's come in with their injured shoulder, knee, ankle, whatever, treat yourself like a pro athlete would. So what would a pro athlete do if they had an injury? They would recruit their nutritionist, their physio, their trainer, their coach. They would optimize their life, and they would take enough hours out of the day in order to just accelerate their return to sport. And again, hopefully, as we say, fitter, faster, and stronger than they were before. So you, as a regular person, you might not have all these people in your repertoire, and you might not have so much time in your day, but you can do many versions of that. You can ask for help from a trainer, from a physio, from a sports nutritionist. You can just take the amount of time you have in your day, expand it a little bit, and just never miss a day of training. And just set your goals just the way a pro athlete would do, with metrics about what does it take for you to get back and be better. And be kind of disciplined about those metrics. It matters. And in order to score yourself, to bring yourself back. So I think the difference between a pro athlete and an amateur is that a pro athlete makes it their business to return better than they've been before. And you can do that too, even if you're not a pro. So part of that falls into the use your injury as an excuse, as an opportunity to do a total body assessment, use the tools around you. And, you know, with online teaching, everyone has access to a coach and a trainer these days. There's so many both free and paid online coaching and training opportunities. Everyone has access to good nutrition these days. It's online everywhere. It's, you know, water is our primary beverage. We can talk about that in a little bit. But there's almost no excuse other than I hadn't really thought about doing that. And so my job as a physician is to help you think about it, show you ways to do it well, fix whatever's wrong, and help you come back better.
That'll definitely be my approach. Touch wood that I don't get injured anytime soon, but the next time I get injured, it'll be approaching it like that. What are some of the most common injuries you see? Is it mostly knee related? Obviously, big elements when it comes to joints and shoulders maybe, but what are some of the most common injuries you see? And I know you have areas of specialty, but for people listening, are there any ones that you would recommend that they keep out a particular eye for? We've mentioned, you know, knee, and I know in the book you talk about, is it a snap, crackle, and pop? I think it was the Rice Krispies reference to the knees. Is that the most common injury that people tend to have to watch out for, or is it something else completely?
So my practice is pretty biased. I'm here in San Francisco, and I treat knee, shoulder, ankle injuries in athletes and people with arthritis. And so I'm seeing an awful lot of torn meniscus cartilages and torn ACLs and damaged articular cartilage and damaged rotator cuffs and unstable ankles and ruptured Achilles tendons. These are sort of the most common things that we see and that we spend a lot of time on, both in the clinic and in research and in the rehab, about how do we accelerate recovery from those injuries and how do we not let those injuries damage somebody's joint for a lifetime. So in every one of those now, we can either replace the tissues or add healing factors to those tissues and repair those tissues, and do an awful lot of meniscus replacement for people who, when they were in college or high school, they tore their meniscus, that shock absorber inside their joint, the surgeon went in and took it out, and then they developed arthritis. And so our belief is that as soon as it's torn, it should be repaired or regenerated or replaced. The rotator cuff is a really interesting space that has evolved quite a bit over the last few years. We used to repair every rotator cuff tear that we saw, and we now know that we can inject anabolics around the rotator cuff, and many of them will actually go on to heal on their own and stop being symptomatic for patients. So that the treatment of rotator cuff injuries has changed tremendously. The treatment of Achilles ruptures, you know, we used to open them, and we've learned that we can percutaneously repair those things just through the skin and add growth factors and accelerate that healing without ever opening the Achilles tendon. And chronic ankle instability, which so many of our athletes have had from ankle injuries and they've lived with, there's just really simple ways now to repair those ligaments, and much simpler than there used to be in the past. So our attitude about the injuries is what's evolving. Our ability to stimulate healing, to use PRP and growth factors and recruitment factors, has made a huge difference in our care of these athletes.
Yeah, from what I got from going through the book, I have massive gaps in my knowledge around the science for recovery, particularly that where we're going and where we're at now is miles ahead, quantum leaps from 10 years ago. And, you know, I think it was chapter 6 or 7, it was towards the middle end of the book with the anabolic therapies, and we touched on those already. Before we get into that, and I am going to ask you about stem cells as well, because you've mentioned some of the growth factors, et cetera, there, and I do want to pivot into that direction. But before we do that, can you talk to us about how our bodies heal? Because I think it's important for people to have that kind of baseline information so that we can potentially go down different directions with anabolic therapies and some alternative ways that people can heal or repair and recover, apologies, as opposed to heal might not be the right use of language.
So here's an analogy to chicken soup. If you make chicken soup and you don't put salt in it, it doesn't taste very good. Or if you make chicken soup and you're missing an ingredient or two, it just doesn't taste very good. So healing is like chicken soup in a sense. You need all of the factors to come together to get healing to go correctly. So you have an injury, the tissue is damaged, the cells and fluid in that broken tissue send out signals to the brain around pain, signals to your stem cells that live on walls of vessels to, hey, divide and come to the site of injury to direct the healing response, signals to create new blood supply to that healing place, signals to stimulate cells to lay down new collagen and to take away the dead injured tissue. So that's a concert that all has to go on sequentially and at the same time in order to stimulate a healing response. And you have to have a good mindset, because if you're depressed or if you're angry, if you're frustrated, the whole healing process just does not go as well as it does when you're optimistic and thinking positively about things. So Healing is about marshaling together all of those resources. And as a physician, we have the ability to interact. We can add additional healing factors now. We can sew the tissue back together. We can add scaffolds to regrow tissue. But in general, we will fail unless we organize all those other factors to come together.
And how does anabolic healing work then?
So an injury can be stimulated to go down a pathway that lays down new collagen and reforms tissue in a healthy way, or it can go down a scar tissue pathway or a degenerative pathway. You know, we're all familiar with lateral epicondylitis, that pain you get on the outside of your elbow with overuse usually, or sometimes from an injury. And sometimes it heals nicely, and other times it takes months to a year to heal because the tissue goes down a degenerative pathway. It's not inflammation, it's actually death of the tissue. And so our job is to stimulate a healing response that goes down the healing path rather than the degenerative path or the scar tissue path. And we can do that with growth factors that we get from your own blood. We can do that from growth factors from birth tissues. We can do that by stimulating a new blood supply. We can do that with electrical stimulation and magnetic stimulation and shockwave and soft tissue massage. All of these are tissue stimulation techniques that help tissues heal.
With growth factors from birth tissue, and again, I have a gap here, is that stem cell or is that something else?
That is recruiting your body's own stem cells to the site of injury.
And how does stem cells work? Because this is an area that I'm definitely going to be doing more research off the back of this conversation, off the back of the book, because it, when I think of recovery and I think too good to be true, but science is like, no, no, this is working. I think stem cell therapy, can you explain a little bit about that and how that works? Because from somebody looking on the outside, who's not an expert in this, not doesn't specialize anywhere near this area, it looks like a wonder in terms of how it can potentially heal the body and repair the body. Can you talk to us a little bit about it?
So when you have an injury, the call goes out to your stem cells, which are these pluripotential cells that can become any other tissue and can direct the site of healing. These cells live on the walls of vessels. They're called perivascular cells, and your body has billions of them. And so you're at injury, you send out these signals, those cells leave the walls of vessels, they divide, one cell becomes a stem cell again, which is why it's a permanent cell. And the other daughter cell is a progenitor cell that rushes to the site of injury to direct the healing response. So it used to be that a lot of the stem cell industry or advocates said, why don't we just harvest stem cells and inject them into the site of injury? And it turns out that that therapy did not work as well as injecting cytokines or recruitment factors that stimulate the billions of stem cells that your body already has to divide and go to that site of injury. So the whole field of anabolic therapy now is shifting away from injecting direct cells, because you can only inject a few million of them and they often will die or not. They're not natural for that site. And it's shifting towards how do we inject better and better recruitment factors to stimulate your body to direct that healing response. So it's an exciting time. We have a public nonprofit research foundation called stoneresearch.org. You can see a lot of the information and research data on what we're doing to try to augment these therapies. So that brings you back to what are the major ones to use. So right now, PRP, where the physician takes your own blood, spins your blood, gets the platelets out, and releases the growth factors from those platelets at the site of injury, is one way of both stimulating healing, but also they have potent recruitment factors in them for your body's own cells. Birth tissues, the amniotic fluid and amniotic membranes and Wharton's jelly, are other very, very potent recruitment factors and stimulating factors as well.
With the research, is this the area that you're most excited about, or is there another area of recovery that an injury prevention, even take whatever direction you like, that you're particularly excited about at the minute?
Yeah, no, we're jazzed on several areas. One is We've developed a good technique for cartilage repair called articular cartilage paste grafting. So we're repairing defects in people's cartilage in both athletes and people with arthritis. We've been optimizing the meniscus transplantation technique so that people don't have to walk around without their meniscus and they can have a new meniscus at whatever age they are. I've put one in a 73-year-old who still wanted to run centuries and he's continued to run until he was 77 on his new meniscus. And our research is around how we regrow and replace these tissues and stimulate this healing. So that's the stuff I'm most excited about. And applying the research to the patients in the clinic is a great thrill.
Brilliant. And I've only a couple of more things that I want to touch on and pick your brain on. Cortisone, something that I have a very kind of mixed opinion on because I was given a couple of cortisone shots into my knee back when I was playing sport, back when I used to play football. And they didn't work very well for me, which I think, again, it can be a common trend for people because it works for X amount of time and then it stops and it doesn't fix any underlying issues. In my case, anyway, in your book, you talk about cortisone, the end of an era. Where do you think that is going? Do you think that is a case now that, and a lot of people listening, you can explain what cortisone is for those who are unfamiliar and then talk about what you mean by it being an end of an era?
So cortisone is that steroid that physicians have injected into people's joints and tissues for a long time. Cortisone acts by shutting down cell metabolism. So it turns off the activity of cells, which is why it shuts down inflammation, because inflammation is overreaction of the cells and a tremendous amount of swollen tissues. So cortisone would shrink those swollen tissues. The negative is that it shut down healing and it weakened the tissues. And so we would see tendon ruptures after cortisone injections. So it's exactly the opposite of what we want to do in this anabolic era of orthopedics, as I call it in sports medicine. We want to stimulate healing. We want to provide natural anti-inflammatories. We want to recruit your body's own progenitor cells. So cortisone is pretty much out the door in most of the things we do. Every once in a while in a bursa, we might use it around the hip, but most of the time we're using growth factors instead.
Yeah, and as someone that's experienced it firsthand, I'm so happy that it's moved in a different direction. And hopefully I'll be in the last of that bracket of people who got the negative effect of it. And for me, it didn't fix any of my biomechanics. Because of me, it was running. It was a biomechanical issue on my run and was causing all that problem. And I didn't realize that until years down the line when I had a very good and strong sports rehabilitation individual help me with that. And again, it's just one of the many things that are covered in the book. I just have one final question. And for those who are listening, picking up the book after this, if you're going through an injury, I think particularly if you're in the midst of it now, or if you're like me, where injury prevention is a big thing for you because you want to be training for the next 30, 40, 50, 60 years, there's so much in here that you could potentially unpack. And I will, for people that want to pick it up, actually, Dr. Stone, before we get into the last question, where's the best place for people to pick it up? Is it on Amazon? Is it through the website? Is it in the stores? Where would you like to send people to pick it up?
Sure. Amazon has it both as a book and as an Audible. So you can do it that way as well under Play Forever, Kevin Stone. And then Barnes & Noble also has it on their site as well.
Brilliant. And my final question, the book goes through so much, as I've said. What have you found from your conversations with people, probably people like me, people who have read the book, people that you're in contact with? What's been the most commented back section of the book to you?
It's probably actually the part that we didn't talk about today. We'll talk about another time. It's how do they avoid a joint replacement? Because what we've done, and if they have an artificial joint replacement, can they get back to sports? And so those two major areas that we do spend a lot of our time in, for people who, it turns out that 80% of people who are told that they need to have a total knee replacement actually don't. They could have a new meniscus put back in, or they could have a cartilage repair, or they could have a partial replacement done where just one part of the joint is resurfaced. And those who really do need to have a total joint replacement, we've totally shifted the way we do these now, always with a robot, always outpatient, always without cement, the old thing that used to break down in people's joint replacements. So we now can do them where they press fit, where the body grows into the implant. And that means I have my total joint replacements out running marathons and playing sports and doing the things they love. So it's that whole part of the space has evolved a lot. And I think I get the most questions about that. And I'm happy to share that information. By the way, we provide a free service for people. It's an outside consult. So if they go to stoneclinic.com and go outside consult, they can upload their x-rays and MRIs. And if we can get enough time, we'll get on the phone with them and talk to them about what their x-rays and MRIs show and explain which of these sorts of therapies they might be a candidate for. We can't always make a final decision without examining people, but we can give them pretty good advice virtually these days, and we do that as a complimentary thing.
And did you say stoneclinic.com is the website for that?
It is.
Fantastic. And for everybody listening, I will link stoneclinic.com into the show notes for today's podcast on briankeenfitness.com, and I will link the book Play Forever. You can go pick it up. And the audio, big fans of audio on this podcast, I know. Yeah. So check out the audio version of the book as well. And everything we discussed and talked about in today's episode will be in the description on the podcast platform you're listening to and in the show notes, as I said. Dr. Stone, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all you do. And I'll chat to you again soon.
Good to talk with you. If we've inspired anyone to continue to play forever, then I feel like we've done a good job.
100%. I'm definitely sure we did that.
Take care.
There you have it, Dr. Kevin Stone on how to recover from injury and thrive, becoming an athlete who can quote unquote play forever, and the mental fitness for physical recovery. We got through a lot in today's podcast, some new stuff that we haven't previously covered. Again, outside my area of expertise when it comes to sports medicine. So I got a lot of value from today's episode, and I will definitely be going back to re-listen if I ever get an issue with an injury again or to get my mindset right. But I also made some notes myself on staying injury-free and injury prevention. So if you want to get my top three takeaways from today's podcast, make sure you subscribe to my email newsletter. Every Thursday, I send out my top three takeaways from that week's podcast. You can head over to briankeenfitness.com and pop your email into the newsletter on there, and then you will get it lunchtime every single Thursday. That's all from me for this week. Hope you enjoyed. As always, be sure to share and tell your friends about the podcast if you think it will benefit them. And I'll catch you all next Monday.